From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. The White House has recently ordered a review of federal programs that help local police departments throughout the U.S. acquire excess military equipment, including assault rifles and armored vehicles. The review comes on the heels of police response to the almost nightly demonstrations in Ferguson, Missouri, since the shooting death of Michael Brown. Law enforcement agencies here in Southwest Florida have acquired military equipment through such programs. We'll explore what local police departments have bought and how that equipment may be used here. Plus, the results are in from Tuesday's primary election. We'll highlight the winners and losers of local and statewide races, along with analysis of what to expect as we head toward the November general election. First, this news. From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. I'm John Davis. Thanks for joining us. Amid low voter turnout, the results are in from Tuesday's primary election. Our political analysis team joins us for a closer look at the winners and losers of local and statewide races and what the outcomes mean as we look toward campaigning for the general election in November. That conversation's coming up later this hour. But first, following the August 9th shooting death of Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri, tension between demonstrators and local police have turned the nation's attention to the town. Images from Ferguson of police with armored vehicles, semi-automatic rifles, and body armor have brought increased attention to federal programs that help local police acquire military equipment. The U.S. Department of Defense's 1033 program has allowed police departments around the country to purchase more than $4.3 billion worth of paramilitary weapons, vehicles, and other equipment at discounted rates. A recent news press report finds several law enforcement agencies in Southwest Florida have purchased such equipment. Last week, President Obama called for a review of these federal programs. Attorney General Eric Holder recently said in a statement, quote, "It makes sense to take a look at whether military-style equipment is being acquired for the right purposes and whether there is proper training on when and how to deploy it," end quote. Earlier this summer, the American Civil Liberties Union released a report titled War Comes Home, which expresses concerns about the militarization of local law enforcement agencies and how some of this equipment is being used. Have local law enforcement agencies become too militarized? What are the benefits of these federal programs like the Defense Department's 1033 program? Joining me now for a closer look is News Press reporter Jason Cook. His recent reporting provides details on how law enforcement agencies here in Southwest Florida have participated in federal programs, enabling them to acquire military equipment. Jason Cook, thanks for joining us in studio today.
Happy to be here.
Also with us is Charlotte County Sheriff Bill Premel. He's been active with the Charlotte County Sheriff's Office for more than 20 years. It's among the law enforcement agencies here in Southwest Florida that have acquired some of this military equipment. Sheriff Premel, welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Good afternoon. Thank you for inviting me.
Listeners can join our conversation as well. Connect with our guests by calling 877-GCU-TALK. That's 1-877-428-8255. Send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org. Post comments and questions on Facebook at WGCU Public Media, or join the live Twitter chat using the hashtag GulfCoastLive. And Jason Cook, let's begin with you. Much of the national attention into what's been dubbed, the militarization of local law enforcement comes in the wake of the Michael Brown shooting in Ferguson, Missouri. But your story came out on August 8th, which was before Brown's death. First of all, kudos on being ahead of the story. But what prompted you first to explore this topic in the first place?
Well, actually, it was one of the other papers in the Gannett family. I believe it was the one in Arizona had looked at it in their state, I think prompted by the ACLU report, which came out in July. So one of the editors saw that and just decided, hey, we should look into it around here and see what's going on there. And it turned, happenstance that it started to become a national topic after that.
And tell us generally about your findings. Which law enforcement agencies here in Southwest Florida did you look into, and which ones have participated in one of these federal programs to acquire military equipment like 1033?
So I got numbers from across the state, but Cape Coral Police Department, Charlotte County Sheriff's Office, Collier County Sheriff's Office, Fort Myers PD, Lee County Sheriff's Office, they all make appearances on here in terms of the firearms acquired. And then there's also these large armored vehicles, which I think many of those departments have at least one of those. And the news press actually wrote about the Fort Myers PD's vehicle earlier this summer as well. So that also, you know, built upon our coverage.
And, you know, I understand it goes much further beyond weapons as well. Mm-hmm. Is there other equipment that...
The program's very, it's kind of wide-ranging. They say that they give them everything from file cabinets to whatever, just any surplus equipment that they have, which kind of runs the gamut of almost anything I've come to believe.
And I understand just about 5% of the equipment actually is weapons. And,
sure. Okay. I think, you know, if they give you 50 file cabinets, that kind of brings the numbers down in terms of that. But yeah, it's a small, small percentage.
And where did you go to get this information? Was there public record requests involved?
It was actually just it's a state, I forget the name of it, but it's a state agency that sort of checks up to make sure on the upkeep and of all the equipment. And they just keep just a list of everything. And it actually wasn't a formal request. They just were able to send it over. So, yeah, that's how we got it.
And can you tell us a little about how the 1033 program came about? I understand it dates back to the National Defense Authorization Act in 1996.
Mm-hmm. Basically, from what I gather, the genesis of it was enacted to sort of combat the war on drugs in the late 90s. So they kind of had this program where they're like, well, we have all this excess military equipment. Why don't we, you know, sell it to departments on the cheap to help, you know, combat domestic issues and things like that. And then, of course, that was compacted by the war on terror in the early 2000s. And so that kind of came about that way.
So counterterrorism-related missions were sort of considered the intention later on as well.
Sure. And, of course, the rise in firearm, you know, citizens being more fully armed. You see shootings in, you know, from small towns across the country. So it was sort of that, like, oh, these guys need things like vests and things like that to combat things. You know, it's not nightsticks and revolvers anymore.
And local law enforcement agencies, I understand, are able to acquire this equipment at a very discounted rate sometimes.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I've never bought an M16 before, but it seems like they cost about $1,000 or something like that. And certain departments are able to get them for $5 or so. Basically, they pay through the program, they pay for shipping and or any sort of refurbishments that need to be done on that. So, for example, the armored vehicles cost $750,000, and they were able to get them for 10% of that or something like that.
And whether we're talking about an assault rifle or, you know, a file cabinet here, I mean, this is really just I'm sorry, I've lost my train of thought there. But, you know, regardless of what the equipment actually is that's being purchased, it would otherwise just be destroyed?
Or, like, scrapped or things like that. That's from what I've come across in recent. It's like if a vehicle's sitting there, it's just, you know, gathering rust and they're just going to scrap it away. So I think that's the other thing. And it's kind of just a way to put things that would otherwise not be used to use.
And a Washington Post reporter investigating this topic found that since 2006, law enforcement agencies in Florida have been among the most active participants in the program around the nation to acquire excess military equipment. The Post reports Florida police have acquired more than $250 million worth of military equipment in the last 8 years. Alabama came in at number two, spending $117 million worth of equipment purchase. So, I mean, there's a big disparity there just between the number one and number two states. Did your reporting include looking into participation of Florida law enforcement agencies compared to their counterparts in other states or how involved?
We didn't really compare it with other states, but as certainly as this has come out, that Florida is definitely among the tops in the, you know, the rankings of states. And I think part of that has to do with in terms of the vehicles that you're able to acquire, one of the reasons is they can be used in extreme weather situations. So, for example, if you have a hurricane, a small department could be like, well, if a hurricane comes around, we would need a vehicle that can drive through 2 feet of water and whipping winds or anything like that. So that's sort of a way that – I think that probably has to do with a part of the reason why the state has been able to, you know, is among the tops in the list.
We're exploring the growth of problems in the U.S. that led local law enforcement agencies to buy military equipment. We're talking with News Press reporter Jason Cook, along with Charlotte County Sheriff Bill Primmel. Connect with our guests with your comments and questions. Phone lines are open at 1-877-GCU-TALK. That's 877-428-8255. Join our live Twitter chat using the hashtag GulfCoastLive or comment on Facebook at WGCU Public Media. And that Washington Post story I just mentioned also goes on to explain that in 2006, the Pentagon transferred about $33 million worth of military equipment to local law enforcement agencies. But then by 2013, that dollar amount had increased by more than tenfold to some $420 million. What accounts for this dramatic increase? Is it really anything more than just equipment, more equipment becoming available as missions in Iraq and Afghanistan are winding down?
I mean, I would – this is speculation, but I would presume that that's definitely a part of it, is that as things are quieting down, for sort of to simplify it, that vehicles become outdated or they – you know, if a tire gets blown out, they have to pull it out of the field to say, and then maybe they have to – they have a huge fleet of them and they need to do something with them.
Well, Sheriff Primel, let's bring you into the conversation. Tell us about the Charlotte County Sheriff's Office participation in initiatives like the 1033 program. What sort of military equipment has your office been able to acquire?
Well, the Sheriff's Office has been involved with that program for probably over 10 years now. We first started acquiring some aviation equipment. We got our helicopters through the program, which keeps the cost of our aviation unit actually very low. I have helicopters that were actually flown back in Vietnam. So the cost for us purchasing or getting the equipment from the military basically saves our taxpayers here money, because if I was to buy a helicopter brand new, they're about $4 million, where here I get them for a fraction of that cost. We've also, you know, this all started back, probably you remember the L.A. bank robberies, when the two gentlemen
yes.
were head-to-toe Kevlar, and they were shooting up the streets. Law enforcement was heavily outgunned, and that started to open our eyes to the fact that, you know, things are changing out there, and law enforcement was walking around with handguns while the people we were up against were walking around with semi-automatic and automatic weapons. So we did acquire AR-15s from the military as well, and we have all our patrol outfitted with them in the event that they're needed. Luckily, here in Charlotte County, we're a safe county, so we don't pull them out that often, but, you know, you got to be prepared in the event that something does happen. You know, if you're going out looking to mend fences with the community over something, going out there in riot gear, rifles, and armored vehicles, probably not the best way to go about it. But when things turn violent, you got to make sure that your members are prepared, they're trained, and they have the equipment to protect themselves, because they want to go home at the end of their shift too.
And even going beyond the weapons aspect of it, as Jason and I were talking earlier, we mentioned, you know, just 5% of equipment that's been acquired through the 1033 program by law enforcement agencies around the country has actually been weapons. Have you been able to get other equipment as well?
Well, we have the ability to. We really haven't. The things what we focus on is trying to keep our aviation unit up and running, because, like I said, that's that probably only cost me a little over $300,000 a year. With that's with maintenance and my employees that are employed over there. So that's really very inexpensive as compared to some other agencies that have brand new equipment and things of that nature. We got the AR-15s. We recently purchased a robot because we found last year when Sergeant Wilson was killed. We actually called a neighboring agency, and they came over with their armored vehicle and their robot so we can get close and get in to the apartment to check on the assailant. And that's when we found out that he had taken his own life, because he kind of had a tactical advantage of a second-floor apartment, and we couldn't risk on sending additional people in there.
So when you have something like a hostage situation or an active shooter situation, something, or someone barricaded inside, that's when you might deploy something like the mine-resistant ambush-protected vehicles?
Yes.
Okay. And when did Charlotte County, excuse me if you already said this, but when did you acquire your mine-resistant ambush-protected vehicle? And can you describe it for us a little bit?
I believe that was earlier this year. It's quite a big piece of machinery. And I hope that we never have to use it. But the fact is we do train our SWAT team in the operation and how to deploy it, when to deploy it. We've had occasions, like I stated, when Sergeant Wilson was killed, and also a couple years ago we had an incident where a resident was shooting up the neighborhood from his house. He just kind of got a bit upset. He was a gun novelist. He had several hundreds of rounds of ammunition and weapons in his vehicle, and he just shot up the neighborhood. He had high-power weapons that were going through his walls into the neighbors' walls. And again, we couldn't get close enough to him, so we had to call our neighbors to come up with their armored vehicle. So when this became available, like it was explained, we got it for a fraction of the cost. I believe it was a $450,000 piece of machinery, and we paid $2,000 for it.
Wow. And would a mine-resistant ambush-protected vehicle be particularly useful in some way in the event of a hurricane or other natural disaster? How would it have helped when Hurricane Charlie hit Punta Gorda 10 years ago?
Well, I don't know if we necessarily would have deployed it during the hurricane. It is more for us getting teams of people in and possibly doing rescue missions where we need to get somebody out of an active shooter situation where we can provide cover and evacuate them safely. I don't really see a use for it during the hurricane.
Okay. And a recent report from FloridaWatchdog.org mentions that purchases made through the 1033 program by the Brevard County Sheriff's Office have included two grenade launchers. And that was just something that caught my eye. Why would local law enforcement agencies need grenade launchers?
Well, I guess it depends on what type it is. We have launchers that we've purchased, but they launch gas.
Okay.
Grenades, where we can shoot gas into a building or into an area if we need to disperse people or we need to do a diversion in order to do an entry.
And you know, you had talked about how inexpensively you've been able to purchase some of this equipment compared to, you know, what you'd have to pay going through other avenues without 1033. Could you in any way quantify how much perhaps taxpayers of Charlotte County have been saved by your office's participation in this program?
Well, like I stated, if I was to purchase a helicopter, it would be about $4 million. We recently got a helicopter that we're in the process of getting switching over because one of my other helicopters, it's recently been grounded because it was back in the 70s, and the flight time is up on it. They have a certain amount of flight time where the airframe can fly for. So we recently acquired an aircraft from the military that I paid $7,000 for.
Wow. And was the 1033 program particularly beneficial during the Great Recession when, you know, money for capital expenditures became tight?
Well, in keeping my aviation unit up and running, yes. That was, again, under a different sheriff, but we're able to get parts and stuff for our helicopters to keep them up and running. So that was very beneficial, and we still use the 1033 program to get parts for our helicopters.
And when it comes to acquiring excess military equipment, are there other federal programs besides 1033 that the Charlotte County Sheriff's Office has taken advantage of? I'm thinking of something like the Department of Homeland Security's grants to local law enforcement agencies or the Department of Justice's Edward Byrne Memorial Justice Assistance Grant, the JAG program.
Yeah, we use those grants. We get various equipment through the grants for like our forensics. We can get patrol stuff, some software programs. Recently, we purchased a intelligence software program. So, yeah, these have been beneficial with keeping us updated and basically moving us forward, and that's where we're able to do a lot of our intelligence-led policing-type stuff with these software-type programs and these different pieces of equipment that we're able to obtain, and we're able to do more in our forensics lab with different softwares and equipment we're able to obtain there through a lot of these grants.
During our conversation with Charlotte County Sheriff Bill Premel and News Press reporter Jason Cook, we're addressing the growing use of initiatives like the Department of Defense's 1033 program, which allows local law enforcement to acquire greatly discounted military equipment, Concerns about the militarization of local law enforcement have increased in the wake of volatile demonstrations in Ferguson, Missouri in recent weeks following the shooting of Michael Brown. Connect with our guests. Phone lines are open at 877-GCU-TALK. That's 1-877-428-8255. Post comments or questions on our Facebook page at WGCU Public Media, or join the live Twitter chat using the hashtag Gulf Coast Live. And Sheriff Primella was hoping to address some of the concerns of programs like 1033 and how they've increased in recent years. The American Civil Liberties Union issued a report just this past July, as Jason had mentioned, called War Comes Home. And the report's findings come from analysis of 800 SWAT deployments by 20 different law enforcement agencies around the U.S. Between 2011 and 2012. And we did invite the ACLU to join us for today's conversation, but didn't receive a response in time to coordinate for the show. But the crux of their findings was that the majority of SWAT deployments were for drug searches, and that 79% of the time SWAT teams were deployed in the execution of search warrants, and that typically armored vehicles would be used in those deployments. Has that been your experience, do you think, in Charlotte County?
No, we have not used our armored vehicle for SWAT deployments. It really has to be a very serious warrant in order for us to do that, and we have never done that.
So that would have to be the sort of thing where you really had serious, cogent idea that officers' lives could be put in danger.
We'd have to have very good intelligence that things would have a good chance of going wrong in order to deploy that. Like I said, we do a lot of training, and we have guidelines of when we're going to use it, when we're not going to use it. We've just recently acquired it this year, so our SWAT guys are still getting familiar with it. We have not used it at all since we've purchased it, other than for training.
Well, that touches on another criticism from the ACLU, that they were concerned about proper training for the use of whatever equipment is being acquired for military purposes to then local police purposes. What kind of training is involved, say, for something like the mine-resistant armored vehicle?
Well, actually, we reached out to the military, and they have a course in the use and operation of it. So we are teaming up with them to get our members trained up.
And then additionally, the ACLU was concerned just about regulation of programs like 1033. And the White House, as we've mentioned, has called for a review of the 1033 program in the wake of tensions in Ferguson, Missouri. Do you think that kind of a review is warranted?
Well, it's never a bad thing to do a review of your checks and balances, make sure everything's okay. But, a lot of times people forget. About every 58 hours, a law enforcement officer is killed on the line of duty somewhere in the nation. You don't hear that a whole lot. Mm-hmm. You don't hear that getting reported. And you got to remember, we're the first line of defense if anything was to happen, whether it's a robbery situation, whether it's a hostage situation, an active shooter, or, God forbid, we have another terrorist attack. It's not the military that's going to be responding. It's us that's going to be responding.
And did watching the events in Ferguson, Missouri over the last couple weeks, has that made you reflect on your own office and how you might respond in a similar situation?
We always look to see what other agencies do, and it's hard to judge when you're not up there and you don't have all the facts. It appears, though, that a lot of their problems stem from outsiders, people coming in just looking for an excuse to loot and riot, where it seemed like most of the residents were trying to listen to law enforcement and demonstrate peacefully, but then they had outsiders coming from outside their community, like I said, just seemed to be looking for an excuse.
And, one of the big criticisms of law enforcement response in Ferguson came from images of armored vehicles and officers in protective gear pointing guns, throwing tear gas at protesters. Do you think that was perhaps a necessary tactic, or do you think it more likely fueled the tension that was already growing? Or again, as you said, it's hard to judge from being outside.
Well, like I said, it's difficult to judge without being there. I've heard stories where the crowd were throwing Molotov cocktails at the law enforcement. So in that instance, I would want my guys protected. So I don't know what started that. It's hard to judge when you're not there and you don't see it firsthand. But you got to remember, when we had the Boston bomber, you had armored vehicles all over the place up there, and nobody seemed to cause any waves when that armored vehicle went and retrieved him from the boat. Also, a few months back, they were out in California, I forget the city, but there was a fugitive who had shot two cops, barricaded himself in a house. If you look at the news pictures, there was an MRAP parked right in the middle of the road. Nobody said a word about it.
Now, with this increased attention and scrutiny on the use of MRAPs, on the utilization of the Department of Defense's 1033 program, are you worried that all this kind of coverage and scrutiny could erode public trust and confidence in law enforcement from the communities that they serve and protect?
I would hope not. And, you know, if they need to put more restrictions on the 1033 program, you know, that's going to be their decision, but I hope they wouldn't hinder us in getting equipment that we do need to prepare ourselves. I always hope and pray that we never have to use it, but we still train and we still have to be prepared for the worst.
And Jason Cook, what kind of public reaction have you received from your story, and has that changed since everything that's been developing in Ferguson?
I mean, many of the comments on my story seem to be like either surprise that they didn't know that this program A existed and B was providing this sort of equipment. Because when you think about it, of course police need equipment like that to protect themselves. But it's just sort of where does that come from and how does it work that I think sort of is why we did it and sort of figured things out like that. And I think that's one of the concerns with it is that some of the other, just by my own research, some of, you know, counties with 2,000 residents getting an armored vehicle, I mean, anything can happen anywhere. But, you know, that's just sort of the thing is like maybe the program needs to have certain things on it and does this department need it versus that department and things like that. I think that's sort of the questions that are being raised now.
And Sheriff Primmel, before we close out this part of our conversation, are there any closing thoughts you'd like to leave us with?
Well, like I stated, it's a different world out there. We never know what we're going to be facing day to day. We get equipment from the military for a fraction of the price. It's a benefit to us. It's a benefit for our communities because, you know, we're not raising our budgets or making large capital expenditures and putting that burden on our community. So it does benefit us. And like I stated, I can't stress enough, we have to be prepared for the worst and always just pray for the best.
Well, that is all the time we have for this portion of the show, but I want to thank my guests, Charlotte County Sheriff Bill Primmel. Thanks so much for your time today.
Absolutely. Thank you.
And Jason Cook covers breaking news for the News Press in Fort Myers. Jason, thanks for joining us in studio.
Oh, thanks for having me.
We're taking a short break, but when we return, with Tuesday's primary election behind us, our political analysis team convenes for a look at the results and what they indicate about local and statewide political races as we head toward the November general election. That conversation's just ahead. Stay with us. You're listening to WGCU, NPR for Southwest Florida.